Hello, world, and welcome to another episode of Polar Opposites. That's the PO show right here on Blog Talk Radio. I'm your host, Big T, and as always, I'm joined by my co-host, my main man, your friend, my friend, soon to be everybody's friend, none other than Mr. Cool Hand Phil. Phil, how are you, sir? Well, we definitely got a good show coming, and yes, I did enjoy that extra, that three-day weekend. We don't get a lot of them, so I love them when we can. But also, let's go ahead and bring on to the show our floor general, our point guard for the show, Mr. Indiana Basketball Hall of Fame himself, Ron Rutland Jr. Ron, how's it going, sir?
Everything's great. Appreciate you having me on again. Thanks.
We definitely love to have you. Your insight is invaluable, and as we look at these conference finals, both in the East and the West, we need your expertise to help us understand what is really going on. But let's go ahead and take a pause and get started here. We'll start the show the same way we start every single show. As adults, you make plenty of decisions every single day, and we're just glad that you decided to spend a little bit of time with us right here on the PO show. As we mentioned, I mean, it is, you know, the conference finals are going on right now in the East and the West, and I got to tell you, I thought that we were going to see some really good games because for the first time in a long time, the finals actually lined up with the number one seed playing the number two seed, the way it should be. The number one seed playing the number two seed in both conferences. And I thought that was going to yield some very competitive, some good games. And I will say, the games have been competitive in terms of the play, but it's definitely been one-sided in terms of which teams have come out victorious. And, you know, before we dig in real quick, let me just start right here. Just to get a, I just want to get the pulse of the show crew right now. Please let me know, is there a legitimate argument out there? Is there a legitimate argument out there that could make me believe that LeBron James isn't the baddest man on the planet when it comes to basketball right now?
Well, I'll jump in here first to take it. I think right now there's no argument that he is the best player, or at least he's playing like the best player. I think you and I discussed this shortly or briefly a few weeks back when we were talking about LeBron versus Curry. And I just felt like Curry, he gives you the same thing every single night. He plays tough. He plays hard. In my opinion, he makes two or three plays where, you know, you just, your jaw drops. You're like, oh my, you know, I can't believe he just did that type of play. It's very exciting to watch with LeBron. You know, probably the biggest gripe that I've had about him is he's very inconsistent. Mm-hmm. You never know which LeBron is going to show up. And that's in the past, back in, you know, finals when they've lost, and very subdued in his play. Doesn't want to take the last shot, you know, doesn't want to step up, doesn't want to be the guy with that killer instinct.
Right.
But from what I've seen from LeBron the past two series, is really the player that we all expected him to be. I mean, it's kind of like, even though you knew LeBron was the most talented player, I still felt like he was underachieving. You know, kind of like a John Calipari. Hey, you go to Final Fours, that's excellent. Not every coach can say that, but with the talent that you have, I think he underachieved.
Okay.
It was the same thing with LeBron.
But
and,
so,
I just really feel like,
no, I just want to make sure. But so you are saying, though, I just want to make sure I'm hearing this right, but you are saying that he is the best player on the planet?
When he wants to be, yeah. I mean, I think he has all the tools where he can do that. If he plays like he has the past couple nights, I mean, if you can name someone that can stop that, I'd be interested in hearing. But I don't know who can stop that when he plays aggressive basketball, where he wants the last shot, takes the last shot, and makes it. Nobody can stop that. Nobody.
Okay, Phil, look, let's cut to the chase. Do y'all go together, or y'all still broke up? That's what I want to know.
No, I'm still broke you. I'm done. You know, I don't take anybody back after that. I'll still appreciate, but, you know, once somebody burns you that many times, you know, when they quit in finals and all that, I still think that quit is in him.
Okay.
And then, you know, with the comments that he made, if you listen to his press conference, the first thing out of his mouth every single night, doesn't matter if they win or lose, is, you know, I got to be a leader for my team.
Okay.
To me, if I was his teammate, you're not my coach. You know, just go out there and play basketball. I don't need to be reminded that you're my leader every single night. Just play ball. You know, he threw his coach under the bus for no apparent reason. It's like he's on a power trip. You
okay.
know, it's like he wants to prove to everyone he runs that organization. So, no, we're done.
Okay.
I'm finally quitting.
Well, okay, I don't even know why I got him started, Ron. My bad. But Ron... But is he the best player on the planet right now?
I mean, yeah, I don't think there's ever been a question, you know, whether he, you know, if he is or isn't. I mean, he's the best player on the planet. And I think kind of what, you know, Kuhan kind of alludes to is where he says, you know, it's whether he, you know, chooses to be or not.
Mm-hmm.
I think what sometimes gets lost in the translation is because we talk about how good he is, the best player, because of what he, everything he does. I mean,
right.
Between rebounding, defensively, assists. We look at the whole game. You
yeah.
know, he's the best player because of his all-around game. But what can get lost is he can have 20, 10, and 12.
Mm-hmm.
But then if a Durant or a Stephen Curry goes out and drops 40, that kind of dilutes.
Right.
Because we are so point and scoring oriented that we kind of say, oh man, they dropped 40. You
right.
know, and in the fashion they did it because, you know, they're, you know, hitting 6 and 7 threes in a game where,
mm-hmm.
you know, maybe that's not LeBron's strong suit. And he'll have some games like that.
Right.
But that's not what he can do night in, night out, as far as dropping those kind of numbers. But because he does everything,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
nobody, you know, nobody does what he can at that level. You know, people comparing to Magic Johnson, you know, I think, you know, that is the best comparison more than a Michael Jordan.
Right.
You know, because of his all-around game.
Right, right.
So, yeah, he's definitely, you know, the best in the business.
Yeah, it's clear to me. I mean, it's not even arguable, really, when you look at, like Ron, like you said, you look at the box score, you look at his stat line, it's not even arguable. And, you know, LeBron made this comment a couple of years back, and we kind of scoffed at it when he made the comment, you know, I've spoiled y'all. And it's the truth. You know, he spoiled fans and the expectations to the point where you want to see this 40-point game every night or him hitting the winning shot every night. And, you know, Phil, I think there's something that you said last year when we were talking, and you brought it up again at the beginning of this season as well. And it's something that you've been fond of saying, and I heard you when you said it, but it's really kind of, it's really been illustrated with LeBron's play as of late, and particularly with his move to Cleveland. You know, Phil, you said that there really isn't a such thing as a big three, that you really can't have a functioning basketball team and really have a big three. There's not enough possessions, there's only one ball, and there's just not enough plays to go around so that you can have a big three. And I think it's that concept, Phil, and I really want you to think about what I'm saying. I think it's that concept that gives you this up and down play from LeBron. When you say, you know, one night he's on, one night he's on, I think that is him deferring to those other players. But look at the LeBron we're looking at right now. Well, why? Because he's on a team with nothing but role players. You know, Kyrie Irving's a shell of himself and hasn't played in a couple of these last few games. He's out of the question. Kevin Love is out indefinitely after surgery. So it's just LeBron. So he doesn't have to defer to any other ego. He doesn't have to defer to anybody else. He doesn't have to worry about a D Wade or a Chris Bosh. he can just go out and do his thing. And I think, quite honestly, Phil, like I said, and you brought that to me over a year ago, I think that's what's at play when you say, well, you know, why does LeBron do this? Why is he doing that? Or if you say, what's the difference in LeBron right now and the LeBron in Miami? I think that's exactly what it is that there isn't a Kyrie Irving, there isn't a Kevin Love, and LeBron knows hands down, if in fact we're going to do anything, I've got to do it. And he's going out and showing it every single night.
Yeah, but the thing, you know, he got this reputation, not in Miami. The reputation was already built when he was in Cleveland the first time. There was nobody on that Cleveland team. I mean, who was it, Boobie Gibson? I mean, right. That was like the second best player. I don't even know if he's still in the league. I think he played with that Mo, what was his name, Maurice something, the point guard. But, I mean, he never played
Mo
with...
Pete.
Who?
Pete was his last name. Mo Williams or Mo
yeah,
Pete?
Yeah, Mo Williams.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Yeah, I think it was Mo Williams. And he was a pretty good point guard, but LeBron got that reputation back then. So I mean, I think it's easy to say, oh, he doesn't have the players around him to distract him from, you know, the limelight now or, you know, going out and taking what's his. But there was still a difference from each night where, even in Miami, I mean, they lost two finals with that team, and they didn't go after it. You know, you could tell LeBron didn't go after it. I liken it to game three of the Warriors and the Rockets that we just saw a couple nights ago, where James Harden, he just didn't bring it. You know, he just did not come out and play tough. I mean, they ended up getting blown out by 30-something points, and there was a difference in his play. It was like a switch that just turned off, and he didn't come to play. It didn't have anything to do with Dwight Howard showing out or Smith, you know, just knocking down shots. It's just he chose not to do it. And I think that's what it's been with LeBron. We haven't seen him with that killer Kobe-like, Jordan-like instinct. Mm-hmm. And again, I don't like Kobe, but I think Kobe had that instinct where he tries to bring it every single night, and I just don't see that from LeBron, except for as of late. You know, I've seen it from him where he says, hey, I'm taking this.
Right.
Thinking, you know, you put it, you phrased it better than I could. It was what I was thinking, but you put it in words that made sense. When you said last year, where it seems like LeBron is almost embarrassed or afraid with his greatness. You know, he goes out, and it's almost like he's so good, and he can do it. It's almost embarrassing. Like, man, you know, I'm not comfortable really with going out and imposing my will on them. And that's what it seems like. And it's like maybe now he's gotten over that.
Right.
But, you know, let's just wait. I mean, this, again, Chicago was not that good. This Hawks team is half the team that they were in the regular season. So if the Warriors stay healthy and they, you know, close out the series against the Rockets, if he is doing this against the Warriors team that we have right now, I will be impressed, because I think the Warriors are a really, really good team right now. And I want to see what LeBron does against them. But, you know, you said it, we've talked about it. In the East, you have a cakewalk to the NBA Finals. I mean, the East just is not that good. You just don't have a lot of teams. And if there's a good team that crops up, injuries usually get them. It's the West that's tough. So I'm curious to see these finals, how they play out, because I'm sure the Cavaliers are going to sweep the Hawks tonight. So I'm just really interested in seeing LeBron versus Curry in the finals. I would love to see how these two teams match up.
Yeah, you're right. The brooms are definitely out in the East and not so much in the West. You mentioned James Harden and his the differences in game two versus game three. And Ron, I want to defer to you here. You know, is it as simple as what Phil is saying, that Harden just didn't go, just didn't want to do it, just didn't have it in him? Or is it something that the Warriors were doing? Now, we know that in game three, the difference that Steve Kerr made was he had Harrison Barnes start and had Harrison Barnes guarding James Harden instead of Klay Thompson. It was that the difference, or is Phil right? In your opinion, did he just not have it? He just didn't want to go, didn't put forth the energy and effort.
From my point of view, I mean, you can look at it and say, Golden State gave him a different look, with Barnes. But, I just can't, never, this one thing that bugs me when I'm listening to the big media people out there.
Mm-hmm.
It's so easy to say that a player, when they have an off night, to say, oh, they just didn't bring it. They just wasn't in it.
Mm-hmm.
Guess what? We have, as a player, you have off nights.
Right.
You scored, 30-something the first game, second game. The biggest mystery in any sport is how to be consistent.
Sure.
Every night.
Sure.
And it just doesn't happen. No player is consistent and plays at their optimum level every night. Mm-hmm. And he just had that night where it was off. And, you can say it was Golden State. Maybe they gave him a different look. I thought he kind of still played pretty much the same way he did, taking the same kind of shots. They just didn't fall for him that night. And unfortunately, he's been the only one really scoring.
Right.
So when he wasn't scoring, nobody else was there to pick him up.
Mm-hmm.
And that's usually the difference when you have your star. It's all, who else is going to help pick up that slack? And nobody else was scoring that night. Everybody was shooting a bad percentage.
Right.
But in my opinion, that's why they got blown out.
Yeah.
If that's the case, come around game four, and he comes out and, he's back when we saw the first two games and they win.
Right.
And
at the same time, though, for what reason, I will never understand or know, Steve Kerr moved Harrison Barnes back off of Harden and put Klay Thompson back on it. So I don't even know what that was about.
I don't know. Yeah, if I'm a coach, and whether I can sit up and say, he's still got some good looks, we just had an off night.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact that you put that player in front of him that night, you never know what kind of psyche that played for him.
Sure.
You know what I mean? So, like you said, why change?
Right.
I'm going to go back, and guess what, Harris, you got him again tonight. Let's see what happens.
Yeah,
I definitely agree with you on that.
Yeah, that was hard for me to figure out, and I couldn't understand it either, because if I'm looking at a professional basketball player, and you only made three baskets the whole game, and you're a professional, I got to point a finger to something other than just you didn't have it that night. There's something, something else.
Yeah.
Help me understand something else. You're a professional at the highest level. You're talking about you're the real MVP, and you only made three baskets all night? Not because you was in foul trouble.
And I get it, and it seems like, how can it be?
Right.
And believe me, I've had nights I've been there.
Mm.
And, I'm averaging 29 points a game, and me to go out and get 11, is like, what happened?
Right.
You might hit, like you said, two or three baskets and free throws in there. And you're kind of like, obviously the other team's going to take credit for the defense. But you know what? Sometimes it's just off.
Okay.
And then what happens is you start pressing.
Right.
Trying harder, and it goes worse.
Right.
I think he just had it, Just one of those nights.
Okay. Okay. So if we look at the marquee players left, and it's almost embarrassing that Atlanta's not even in this conversation, but it is what it is. You've got LeBron James in Cleveland. You've got Steph Curry with Golden State, and of course James Harden in Houston. Right now, where these teams are in the series, whose marquee player, what team needs that player most out of those teams? Does Golden State need Steph Curry more than anybody else? Or does Houston rest their hopes solely on the shoulders of James Harden, or is it Cleveland that they need LeBron more than anybody else? Who's the most valuable player to their teams out of these teams left?
Wow. You know, you mentioned Steve Curry. I want to know who this guy is. Who's Steve Curry?
My bad. I keep thinking about Steve Kerr, because that was something else I thought that was odd about this, and I've been meaning to bring this up, that, you know, here we are in this particular playoffs, and I can't remember getting this deep in the basketball season, and every single team has an untested, relatively new coach. Every single team left has a new coach. I mean, Houston would have, McHale, because I think it's his second, maybe his third year there, but still, he's still untested for all practical purposes. And then, of course, you know, Steve Kerr's first year, Blatt first or second year. I mean, it's just an odd collection that you would get to conference finals and there not be a coaching name that you've, you know, there's no Phil Jackson, Popovich, you know, Doc Rivers, the coaches that we talk about this time of year, Tom Thibodeau, all those guys are gone. And that's just, I just thought that was interesting. And I don't know, I didn't know what you could, what you would point of that. What does that say about the league or what reason you could give for that? But I just thought that was an odd situation in these finals. But back to the players, who needs who most? I mean, I'll jump out there and say, because of the injury situation, even though it's the East, I think we all know unequivocally that Cleveland would not be anything without LeBron James. Kyrie Irving is definitely not 100% and is playing maybe at 40% in these playoffs. So, you know, he's not giving you that much. Although Tristan Thompson and J.R. Smith, have really showed something these past couple of games, and they would definitely give you a lot. I would say Cleveland's dead in the water without LeBron.
I'm going to have to disagree with you. I think most valuable player, most important, would be Festus Ezeli for the Warriors. Now, of course, I'm joking. it's LeBron James. I mean, there's no way that Cleveland would be where they are right now without LeBron James. James Harden, great player. Steph Curry, great player. But, I mean, we saw the Rockets come back, you know, from 20-something points down in that game 6 to beat the Clippers, and Harden didn't see a single minute, you know, during that 18-minute run or whatever it was. He set out, you know, the last quarter and a half. You have Curry went out last night. They go on a, you know, 27-16 run, whatever it was, to really shore up that gap. They had a chance to cut it to a one possession game right there at the end. So, you know, they were able to make a run without him. And their bench always plays well. But, you know, I think if you took LeBron out of the equation, I don't even think the Cavaliers, even if you brought Kevin Love back, I don't think a healthy 100%. Irving and Love could be a beat-up Hawks team. I mean, I just don't know. I think it'd be a good series if you did. So, no doubt in my mind, it's LeBron.
Ron, you see it any differently?
LeBron, yeah, definitely Cleveland would not be in that position, you know. But I'm going to go 1A, 1B because I think the same thing for James Harden.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, just even going back to, you know, game 3, you know, where, you know, he had, you know, like I said, you know, a poor shooting game. And, you know, look what happened. They just got, you know, blown out the gym. So, I think as far as to their team, you know, they're both equally as important. And you know, I think Houston probably, you know, I give LeBron the nod, like you said, because of the injuries. You know, Kevin Love is gone. You know, Kyrie Irving. You know, I think Houston, because they have Dwight Howard, you know, And they got a couple players there that, you know, like Kuhan said, you know, in the Clippers series, you know, they are capable of getting hot and doing some things. You know, they just can't do it consistently.
Right.
So, yeah, I would definitely give LeBron the slight edge in that situation.
Definitely. And, you know, I got to go back to this. I'm telling you, you're onto something, Phil, about this whole there's no such thing as the big three. When as you mentioned, Harden went out and they got on that run to come back in that game five, game six win against the Clippers. But did you notice, too, the other night, last night, when the minute Steph Curry went out, all of a sudden, Klay Thompson wakes up. All of a sudden, his three ball is dropping through the bottom of the net, and it's something we haven't seen him do consistently all game long. But the minute Curry went off the floor, bang, he heats up. But then what happened? The minute you got word that he was coming back after halftime, boom, he went cold again. I don't think that's coincidence, y'all. I really think there's something there that these players, I don't know. I don't know if it gets in your psyche. I don't know why it's difficult, but it just seems like these players, these marquee players, struggle to coexist with other big name stars. I don't know, but maybe it's just me. Maybe I'm looking at it funny, but I thought it was a little more than coincidence. The minute that Steph Curry goes out, Klay Thompson, for the first time in these playoffs, he was hitting his shots consistently. I think he had three threes, darn near back to back.
You're right. I mean, like you said, a psyche, a mentality. You know, it is. You know, when you're out on that floor, and you know, you're a scorer, and that guy's a scorer.
Mm-hmm.
And I was a scorer, but the minute I was put into a position where, maybe, I was playing with another player, and I had to start deferring.
Right.
You're mentally, you get out of that zone. You're not in that same mind frame, that mindset of how to play, to look for your shot,
mm-hmm.
to be as aggressive. Mm-hmm. So, you're still playing basketball, but at the same time, you're not going to approach it in the same manner as if the ball or the game was going through you.
Right.
So now he sees Steph Curry come out the game. So like you said, now all of a sudden it's like, who's the next man up? It's me.
Right.
Okay, now, and he's been there before, so it's not like this is new to him.
Mm-hmm.
So he understands, that switch flips that quick, and like you said, all of a sudden, just the change of the focus and the mentality, boom, he sees one drop. Okay, mm-hmm. boom, I see another one drop. Because guess what? I know I can get two or three shots in a row now,
right?
Without any issue, or without, because that ball's gonna come back to me. So maybe it wouldn't if Steph is still back out there on the floor,
right?
Because he had it rolling, he had it going,
mm-hmm.
and he didn't. And that's where guys, have those guys. They're still young. They have to still learn together to say, okay, even though he's got it going, how can I get it going with him?
Right.
Not just sit back and defer. And that's what LeBron, D-Wade, and Chris Bosh were able to do. They were able to, we can all get it going together versus, they end up becoming that. And it was a struggle at first.
Sure.
Versus just sitting back and saying, okay, hey, this is your time. I'm going to sit back, relax.
Mm-hmm.
No, you got to come, come with me. Join the party.
Yeah, I felt like Spoelstra did a good job of helping that dynamic work. If you think back, they got into a rhythm of where Wade would sit out just about the entire third quarter, let LeBron do work, and then come back in the fourth quarter, and where although LeBron was on the floor, but really kind of defer, or maybe it was the other way around. Maybe LeBron would sit out the third so he could be fresh for the fourth. But anyway, I felt like Spoelstra did a good job of pulling the strings there and orchestrating, okay, whose offense is going to run through and what quarter and when.
Exactly.
And they helped them do that. But you notice, Klay and Steph, they're on the floor together a lot. And I saw maybe one time he looked like I saw Klay out with the second unit for a short period of time. But that didn't really seem to gel, or at least they haven't ran that particular setup enough for it to gel. But maybe that's something Steve Kerr can do. I feel like if they really want to be successful, if they want to get to this next level, go to the finals, they're going to be playing Cleveland. They're going to need Klay Thompson's shot. And what I mean, they're going to need his shot just from a draw in the defense perspective, you know, because right now you really don't have to cover Klay Thompson. I mean, he's not doing anything, you know, and especially from three. I think they put a stat up on the board. You know, he was 4 of 5 at one point last night and 4 of 22 for the first three games, you know. So that right there lets you know, you see what I'm saying? I mean, you wouldn't have to worry about him. If they want to be successful and win these finals, they're going to need him. They're going to need his shot. And Steve Kerr would be wise to try to figure out a way to work him in to being more comfortable or whatever it is, you know. And then again, you know what, Ron, I got to say this, though, too. Maybe when he's not chasing James Harden around, maybe his shot comes to him a little better. Again, we go back. That's the only game where he didn't.
You know what?
Go ahead.
You're right. I mean, one thing a lot of player coaches don't like to do is put their better players, you know, their better scores on the best player, even if they are a good defender.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Because it does, you know, he's so focused on trying to stop Harden that he's not, you know, like you said, the other part of the game, his offensive game, is taking a hit.
Right.
So, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I hope they get him going. Klay Thompson, he's a good young player, and he's better than what we're seeing. And I'd like to see him get in some rhythm and get going there, and not just when Curry goes out. And as we all know, we saw the play. Very scary. Golden State, I'm sure the entire city of Oakland collectively held their breath when they saw Curry go down in that dramatic fashion after tumbling over a crouching Trevor Ariza. He went out. They labeled it a head contusion, but he came back in. I wasn't really sure how I felt about that when he came back. Don't get me wrong. I'm definitely glad to see him up moving around and that he was okay. But if you're on the bench, if you're the head trainer, or if you're Steve Kerr, in a game that seemingly was already out of hand, and the comeback was being mounted by the second unit, would you have brought Steph Curry back into that game?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think you would. I mean, there's no lead. I mean, this is Golden State that we're talking about. We're not talking about the Atlanta Hawks that, you know, once they get down by 15, the game is over.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about the Warriors, who no lead is out of reach. I mean, we saw them come back at the start of the fourth quarter. They were down by 20 points against the Pelicans in the game 3 of that series. And they were still down by 18 with like 5 minutes left
mm-hmm.
in the quarter, and they came back and won that game. So, yeah, I mean, once you see the comeback, at least when they made a run at it, and I think even with a step off the bench, they had cut it to 10 points. So once that happens, yeah, I mean, you got to bring your best player back in. Once he goes through the protocol of the concussion, they say, hey, you know, no concussion, just a head contusion. How does your shoulder feel? Feels good. How does your arm feel? Okay. I mean, you have to go back in. If you didn't go back in and they said, okay, what was the prognosis? Okay, no concussion, no injuries. You know, we would say he's soft. So, I mean, if you're physically able to play and you're the MVP of the league, how can you feel bad about him going back in when, you know, you're only down by 10 points? I mean, you can't just give the game away and say, well, we were down by 27, so let's just forget this game and pull everybody out. No, I mean, you have to play to win that basketball game because you don't know what's going to happen in the next game. You're playing against a team that came back 3-1.
Right.
And, you know, was trailing a team by 18 points or whatever it was at the start of the fourth, and they came back and beat that team by like 13. So they're dangerous. James Harden and crew are very dangerous. You have to try to win every single game. Curry had to return to that game if he was physically able to.
Right, right. Well, what's your take, Ron?
Man, I mean, Kool Aid said it all for me. Mm-hmm. I mean, I 100% totally agree that, you know, no lead is safe with the Golden State Warriors, you know, mm-hmm. and it was still third quarter with plenty of time left in that game to say, you know what, this is a closeout game.
Right.
You know, if we can end the day, you know, sweep this team and get the rest that we need, you know, getting ready for the finals,
mm-hmm.
you know, we, if I'm him and the doctors give me the okay, hey, let's make the push to try to win this thing. You know,
right.
let's give it our all to try to go ahead and close this out.
Right.
You know. I was going to say maybe if it's not a closeout game, things change. But I think with Steph, I think, you know, his mentality, he was going to play regardless.
Yeah, I hear you, but need I remind y'all that when he came back in, his first shot, and again, we talking about the league MVP, one of the best pure shooters we've seen in a long time. His first shot didn't hit anything because he was seeing double, y'all. I mean, come on. I feel like they may have rushed it, especially, like I said, the reserves had already brought him back. They were. I think at that point they got it down within six or seven, something in that range. And you know, you were on the road. Worst case scenario, even if they did, even if Houston got the win, you're coming back home for another closeout game. So I feel like I probably would have erred on the side of caution and left him out. I mean, because he was The way that he was walking to the locker room, he was shook. There's no doubt about it. Like I said, that first shot, when he didn't hit anything, I was like, oh, Lord, the boy is seeing double. You know, I felt like they probably could have gave him a little more rest or let him, you know, sit out. But I understand it. Like you said, hey, this is uncharted territory for them. You know, they're finally the Western Conference Finals. They're a game away from going, to the big show. So I get it. You know, you got somebody on the ropes. You want to do away with them. I definitely understand that. And maybe Steve Kerr's mentality was his mentality. You know, we want to go ahead and end it while we can. But speaking of Steve Kerr and his mentality. This came to me earlier today. I was just sitting and I was just looking at, just kind of looking back over the Warriors' journey, you know, the first round and the second round of the playoffs. And I just started thinking, because, of course, Mark Jackson is on the telecast, which to me adds a little bit of insult to the whole situation. But do you think if Mark Jackson was at the helm this year that the Golden State Warriors would be in the exact same place they are right now, or do you think they would have had an early exit against Memphis or whoever? I forget who they played in the first round. Oh, they played the Spurs. Yeah. So do you think they would have had an early exit against the Spurs?
I do. I mean, you know, you posed a question to us a couple weeks ago about the Spurs. You know, are they done? Is the so-called, you know, miniature dynasty, is it over? And so I was looking at, you know, the pieces that they need to get. Well, I pulled up the Warriors roster, and I looked at, okay, you know, what they had last year, what they had this year, that, you know, the pieces that they added, and that's what let them turn the corner.
Mm-hmm.
This team has been in place for about 3 years.
Right.
Because I was shocked when I saw that, because I thought they added, you know, like that Festus Ezeli,
mm-hmm.
or David Lee or one of these guys. All these players have been on the team for 2 to 4 years, and I was just shocked by that. So, to me, that led me to believe that it was Kerr and his philosophy and his ability to recognize mismatches or whatever. And the thing that was pointed out to me probably about 6, 7, 8 years ago, but one of the commentators, I think it was Doug Collins,
mm-hmm.
but he pointed out that, you know, the good coaches, whenever they come out for a timeout, if they seem like they always get an easy basket,
right,
because the coach is drawing up something perfect for that moment, and you don't know how many, you know, you may have, you know, three or four plays that you score on throughout a game. You don't know if that gives you the win at the end of the game. And when you watch the Warriors play, Steve Kerr, they always seem to get an easy basket coming out of a timeout. And I just think that's great coaching. And I think he's really good with the X's and O's. And when you have the style of players that he has and the type of players, I think that's very important. You know, you just don't have physically imposing players that can go out there and, you know, do their thing. You are doing not finesse basketball, because they do lead the league in some good defensive category,
mm-hmm,
but it's very important to get your guys open shots when you have skilled players such as them. So I feel like with Kerr, they were able to turn a corner that they weren't getting it done with Mark Jackson. And another thing I like to point out, Mark Jackson is probably a good coach, but as you mentioned, I mean, he is doing the broadcast. He's not coaching for another team, so he definitely was not sought after. So I don't think other teams saw what he did with the Warriors and said, hey, you know, we've got to have him leading our team. So I think that's a testament to no one immediately snatched him up. Will he go back to coaching? Yeah, he probably will. But he wasn't a hot enough commodity for someone to pick up immediately. And so I just think Kerr has taken him to a new level that we did not see Jackson take them.
Hmm. Okay. Ron, what you think?
No, I mean, that's those are good points. That's tough because, I think they would still be there with Mark Jackson.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it would be quite the same style,
right,
that we see. I think Kerr has them strictly perimeter oriented.
Right.
The style of play. I'm sure David Lee probably wishes Mark Jackson was still there. Because he was the bigger part of the, you know, of the offense and playing, you know, with Mark Jackson there. Because I think he still, you know, believes in a little bit of, hey, you know what, you know, and this, you know, we need to get an easy basket. Let's throw it down low. Let's try to get it inside. You know, we got some guys that can score.
Mm-hmm.
Versus just, hey, let's go inside to really just let the guys screen for each other and get it and kick it back out strictly
right.
for a three.
Right.
Kind of like Kerr. But, you know, Kerr is, I mean, obviously is a good coach.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, we'll really never know how good because of the situation that he went into with that team.
Sure.
I mean, he went to a great team. You know, but he's definitely a good coach. I mean, you can't take away what he did as a player, his pedigree as a player. You know, being under the tutelage of a Phil Jackson, you know, being with a Popovich, you know, people kind of forget he won a title there as well. Mm. So, you know, bringing probably more of the defensive mindset
right.
and some of the strategies that come along with that, I think, you know, you see a different team from that point of view, probably more than offensively.
Sure, sure.
But I still think, with that group, you know, and Jackson at the helm, I still think they would have been there.
Yeah, I got to kind of agree with you, Ron. Because of the players that they've got from an offensive standpoint, I agree with you. I think they still would have been there. They still would have been scoring a lot of points. Their record may not have been the same. They may not have even been the number one seed. The other point that you made, I agree with wholeheartedly. He did bring a defensive toughness and a concentration and a focus and a commitment of defense that the team lacked previously. I mean, they were winning games in previous years just because they flat out outscored you, you know. But their games were something crazy, 120, you know, 121 to 115, you know, crazy crap like that. But this team is definitely committed to the defensive side of the ball as much as they are to the offense. In fact, you know, something that Phil Jackson would say all the time, they're actually using their defense to create easy offense. And you see that, you know, in the way and the style that they play. So, yeah, I still think they would have made it deep. I made a deep run in the playoffs.
You know, but the point I think you guys are missing, you know, you're saying they had the same players that Kerr inherited a great team. If they were so great, why did they get bounced in the first round last year? That's my point.
Mm-hmm.
You point. I think Kerr is taking them to a new level that Jackson could not, because if the team had changed, you'd say, okay, this is not the same team that Jackson had. But you're saying he inherited the same team, the same great team, and yet they get bounced in the first round. And here they are now looking at an NBA final. So that's why I think he's able to take them to a new level, because it's the same team, but it's a very different result this year.
Right.
Very
but,
different.
And that's true, but...
As you're with the team and you continue to grow,
right?
You know, the next year, that, you know, who's to say he couldn't have done that this year?
Right.
I mean, we've seen teams with the same coach drop out in the first round, and next year they come back, you know, make it to the finals, or the Eastern Conference. You know, they continue to grow. I don't think they gave him that opportunity. You know, obviously it was more behind the scenes. It was probably bigger than basketball, really, what happened. But I still think with the growth of that team, you know, learning from last year, that they still would have been there this year.
And we've seen it with a lot of these teams, especially young teams that have played together for a period of time. It's a process. None of these teams make a leap from not being in the playoffs to the finals. Look at Oklahoma City. Oklahoma City grinded. It was a process, and that team was together, the exact same players the whole time, but they had to learn how to win in the playoffs. They had to learn what it meant to go seven games before they actually got to a finals. Same thing is true. Was true with Memphis. You know, same. You know, they were perennials. They were there every year. First year, first round, second round, before they finally made it to a conference, to a Western Conference final. Atlanta, exact same way. They're in the playoffs every single year, but early exit. Then they got a little deeper. They finally got there. You know, and I think that's what you're going to see happen with Washington. I actually think that Washington could be the team that plays Cleveland next year in the conference final, depending on how, you know, if they don't meet sooner. Because I think that's the next team in the East that I see building year after year after year. This year was the deepest run we've seen from Washington in a while. Last year they had the early exit. So we've seen that, Phil, that we've seen that story time and time again, that it is definitely a process to get from not being a playoff team to being a playoff team to making a deep run into playoffs to finally getting to the conference finals. So I see where you are, and I understand what you're saying. But maybe the point that you made that's probably the most sound is the fact that, you know, we didn't see Mark Jackson immediately go to another job. And, you know, we haven't heard his name come up for the Oklahoma City job. You haven't heard his name come up for the New Orleans job. So, you know, you're definitely on to something in that regard. But to Ron's point, too, I didn't feel like he really had a chance for him to grow as a coach alongside of the team growing. So I'm not really sure what the decisions.
But he was there 3 years. I mean, I think if they would have won a series in his last year, you know, last season in the playoffs, it may have been a different story. But, you know, I think they said, okay, you've been here 3 years and you're getting bounced in the first round. Let's make a change. And that's what I'm saying. It's hard to really question that change.
Sure.
When, you know, they led the league in wins. You have the MVP. It just seemed like they turned a corner. And maybe they would have with Jackson, but, you know. And it's debatable. I see that it's debatable. It's not like he tanked and had a losing record.
Right.
Their win totals did increase, you know, the first year about 20 games, and then it went up again like 5 or 6 games.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know. He was getting there, but, man, you know how this league is. I mean, they want results, and they want them,
man,
you know, sooner than later.
Yes, they do. Yes, they do. And we may not all agree on the front office decisions that Golden State made around the coaching, but I think we'll all agree on the front office decisions that Cleveland made in terms of the players that they were able to go out and get to support LeBron James and his efforts. I was something I was thinking about the other day when I was just looking at, you know, I was like, man, you know, LeBron is getting it done by himself. But then I remembered those pickups. I mean, Moskov and J.R. Smith, they made some incredible pickups, and I don't know. It's going to sound silly for me to say this. It's going to sound silly. But particularly with Kevin Love not being on the floor, that may not have been their most important pickup of the offseason, was Kevin Love. That may not have been their biggest signing. Quite honestly, I think the package of Shumpert and J.R. Smith was the biggest signings that they made. And maybe, you know, and you say maybe that's easy to say because Love's not even on the floor. But if you just look at what they brought, because think about it, they were still losing games with Kevin Love, Kyrie, and LeBron. It wasn't until Iman Shumpert and J.R. Smith got there that things really started to turn around and people started looking at them saying, okay, wait a minute, okay. These guys got a chance. This really might be something.
Yeah, and it could be LeBron just doesn't respect those guys. You know, with Love being out and Kyrie being out, maybe he finally just said, okay, I'm going to have to do this on my own. And it's great when J.R. Smith and those guys make shots. That's when I was still a LeBron excuse maker. Mm. You know, when he was at Cleveland the first time. You know, Mo Williams, garbage. You know, when they would get to the playoffs, LeBron would get triple team, kick out. And I'm talking about wide open jumper in the corner, and he'd be 0-9 in the game. You know, they'd lose the game by 3 points. You know what I'm saying? LeBron can't do it all on his own. You gotta have some of these guys step up. You know, he would always miss shots, and, you know, I feel like that was the reason they couldn't get over the hump. So when guys would win championships, it's the role players that step up. Somebody steps up big, like a J.R. Smith, and that makes all the difference. So with those two big guys getting hurt, you know, LeBron just may not have a lot of faith in these other guys to let them, you know, try to win a game. But it may have been the best thing that happened to them, that he feels like, okay, I have to do more, and he's willing to do that. Because, you know, once those guys went out, it seems like LeBron has kind of flipped the switch. Because who was that against Boston? Was that the first series that Love went out on right. That play?
Yeah.
So, you know, it seemed like kind of towards the end of that series, and then, you know, especially last series, he really flipped the switch, and he's been playing like Superman.
Yeah. As we get ready to sign off, let me ask you this. Now, this is something that I thought about today. I mean, and mainly because of what Tristan Thompson has been able to show deep in, as of late into these playoffs. If Cleveland goes ahead, they're going to the finals. We already know that. They were able to sweep Atlanta. If they're able to actually win the championship, do you think that Cleveland's very aggressive about trying to even sign Kevin Love?
You know,
that's a great question.
Because
I think they will try to sign him. I think he's a big piece. He's a big guy in the lane that can extend the defense because he's not just strictly a post-up player. So even though there may not be such a thing as a true big three, I still think he's an important part of the team. And if they can sign him, I think he needs to sign him.
What do you think, Ron?
I mean, I think they'll try to. And I think they should. You know, I mean, you know, he's still a great player. The question is, if he wants him, will he sign?
Right.
that's the question. I think Cleveland will definitely go, you know, try to keep him. It's just, will he stay? Will he, you know, like you said, is he looking at Tristan, seeing how they play? Is he looking at how the season went? You know, we're kind of up and down for him there for a little while. So there were a lot of games where in the fourth quarter, he wasn't playing. You know, he was on the bench and Tristan Thompson.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm sure he's got a lot to think about, you know. know, if they win the championship, you know, Ruby says, you know what? You know, I was a part of it, but I really didn't, you know, get the full experience. I'm going to stay because I think with this team, we really have an opportunity to get another one. But we're going to say, you know what? You know, let me go back to being the Kevin Love that scored, you know, double-doubles every night, you know, put up big numbers. And let me go out to L.A. and be the new franchise leader.
Right.
Out there, you know what I mean?
See, and that's the thing, because you have to remember, you know, when Kevin Love came to Cleveland, if you recall, you never heard Kevin say, "Hey, you know, I want to win a championship, and you know, this is the best shot to win a championship." All you ever heard him say was, "I want to play with LeBron James." Okay. Well, you got a chance to play with him. It wasn't all you thought it was going to be. And, you know, and well, you got a ring, so now you can look at doing other things. I think just on the surface, because it will look good and it'll be the right thing to do from a media perspective, and because, like you said, he's a good star player, a good athlete, definitely somebody you'd want on your team. So I think Cleveland, quote-unquote, tries to sign him. But if L.A. comes along with a better offer, I don't think they counter. You know, I think they'll put an offer out on the table, and if Kevin wants it and signs it, great. But if a higher bidder comes along, and remember, L.A. is going to have all this crazy cap room next year. I think if L.A. comes with a better offer, I don't think Cleveland puts up much of a fuss at all. And if, in fact, LeBron has as much pull as they say he has, LeBron might be like, you know, we fine. We're okay. I even wonder if on a quiet night, I even wonder if Cleveland thinks that they would have been better off keeping Wiggins. You know, looking back, I wonder if they think, man, if we would have kept Wiggins, we already had Tristan Thompson, brought in these other role players, the J.R. Smith and the Iman Shumperts of the world, you know, and still could have gotten Moskov. You know what I'm saying? I wonder what they think what that would have looked like. Because can you imagine Wiggins coming off the bench as your sixth man? I mean, it's crazy to think what it could be. But that's something that we'll have to kind of keep an eye on. But I definitely think the situation turns based on whether or not they win the championship. If they don't get the ring, I think Kevin Love definitely stays because of that unfinished business thing. But if they actually get a ring, I could see it. I could see him being, just like you said, Ron, I could see him be like, you know what, I'm good. Let me go on here and out to L.A. and be the man. You know, let Kobe go ahead and pass off the keys to the city to me and go on and go the other way. But we will see. We will see that we will answer all those questions as more as the season rolls on. As we said, Cleveland Cavaliers, they wrap things up here out east. And by the time we talk again, we'll know if the Golden State Warriors were able to do the same. As we wind down and finish up this episode of the PO Show, if you like what you heard and you want to hear this show and more, please check us out on iTunes. And never fear. You can always check us out on our show page at poshowradio.com. I'm Big T, and I'm joined by my man Cool Hand Phil and Ron Rutland Jr. You've been listening to the PO Show, Polar Opposites, right here on Blog Talk Radio. We'll do it again next week, folks. Good night.